The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
How do you solve a problem like Black Widow?
Apparently, there isn't a solution. Because according to the internet, everything is broken. None of us can have nice things. And everybody who we like is now terrible. Welcome
that about sums it up.
21st
yeah?
century.
Yes, and welcome to another edition of H2O. Jason Hunt here along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And we have both seen Marvel's Avengers Age of Ultron.
Yes, we have.
And I have a relatively spoiler-free review up on sci-fi4me.com. But that's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the interrage.
Oh, goodness. So for those of you who haven't heard, Joss Whedon has left Twitter. Now, this is not the first time Joss Whedon has left Twitter, by the way. He did it several years ago. Leaving Twitter does not necessarily mean you've thrown up your hands and stormed off in disgust. It could just mean that you've left Twitter. He's on record saying that it eats up a lot of time, even though he enjoys it a lot.
Yeah, it's work.
It's work. And so, hey, you know, for all we know, Joss Whedon sat there and went, okay, you know what? I just finished, you know, my second giant blockbuster movie. I need a break.
Yeah, well,
because we don't know. Because honestly,
he also said that this particular Twitter account he'd set up to promote Much Ado About Nothing.
Sure.
Which he said, you know, in his words, needed all the help it could get to just get the exposure out there and get people talking about it.
Watch all Shakespeare adaptations.
Yep. So
even the bad ones.
So over the weekend, we have Age of Ultron in the theaters, and there are some people who are upset, shall we say?
Yes, that is a good word.
About the depiction of Black Widow in this movie. Now, for those of you who have not seen this movie yet,
yes,
don't listen to any more of our conversation.
Because we are hitting spoiler territory really big.
We're gonna skate the edge as much as we can.
Sure.
But we are gonna talk, because this is all over the internet.
Right.
We could talk about this later, a week or two out from here. But it is just blowing up the internet.
And like the internet, we need to get in on it right now, because before there's any actual information, so that we can... Wait,
yeah.
That's not... Hang on! No.
Well, I think...
I know.
Yeah.
Because you and I like to do this. You and I actually like to take a step back and look at things and try and get data. We want to know what's going on. We want all the information we can get.
Right.
The difference here with something like this is that in some respects, it almost doesn't matter why Joss Whedon left Twitter.
Right, because everybody's got their assumptions they're making.
Right, but the thing that seems to have happened here is that there's a scene in the film, which is you either read it one way or you read it the other. And if you read it one way, you're angry. And I can see the argument for why you're very, very angry if you read it that way. If you didn't get that interpretation of that scene, you're going, blink, blink, I don't understand. Why are you angry?
I understand why they're angry. I didn't see the scene the way they saw it.
Right, right. And honestly, neither did I.
Because it goes from point A to point B. I mean, the dialogue takes you from one to the next and makes the connection.
But as our friend Cammy, who will be not joining us for this. But she made a very good point. And of course, she does stuff with us with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and other podcasts with us. She pointed out that she felt the scene in question was not written well. And that for her, she felt the scene was...
Truncated.
Just truncated.
Yeah, something's missing.
And there's also a couple of things to bear in mind. First of all, that Whedon's cut was at least an hour longer before they edited this film down.
Right. The final, I think, is what, 2 hours and 20 minutes?
We're looking at a film which is almost 4 hours long in the original cut, which apparently we're getting on the Blu-ray.
Oh, good.
Along with a different ending, which is led to questions of different or alternate. And the original term, I believe, was different, which is confusing to folks. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Now we have to buy the Blu-ray. I see what you're doing, Marvel.
Whedon!
We're on to you now.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, of course, And we can speak, Jason and I can both speak from the fact that we are both filmmakers, which means that if you've worked on something, as you're making a film, you've cut your film, you realize your film is too long.
Yeah.
You got to get it down.
There are babies that are going to have to be tossed out.
That's right. You know, and what is it? I can't remember which writer it was said that editing your book is like taking your child out back and shooting him in the head. You know, it's a terrible, painful decision, but you make those choices so you have a better film. But there's also something that happens when you're a filmmaker is that if you stare at the same material long enough, you lose perspective. And so the best thing you could, that terrifying, wonderful moment you have when an audience sees it for the first time and you're there, you're not paying attention to the film, you're paying attention to the audience.
Right.
Because you want to see that they're getting what you meant. Now, so that scene in its original form, that scene could be exactly what Joss Whedon wanted. Right?
Right.
It could also be a truncated scene, or it could be, you know, and sometimes it's a matter of seconds. Sometimes there's a, you know, you could add a pause.
Right.
You can change everything.
Well,
so,
like we talked about with Man of Steel.
Right. Oh, yeah.
There's a couple of places there where
a
little bit of time could have made
toss
a
in,
huge
toss
difference.
In 5 seconds and you can change an entire scene.
Yep.
And the end of Man of Steel desperately needs 15 more seconds that I could tell you exactly where they go.
And you have.
And
I will. You can hear that on a previous episode.
And yet they don't contact me. It's very silly. But the thing is that there are folks who are watching those scenes, that scene in particular, and without it, because we have to be a little spoiler to a degree, this is a scene that takes place between Black Widow and the Hulk. So you've got Natasha and Bruce at a farmhouse having this is a character moment. This is actually,
right.
this isn't a big, things are blowing up. This is a scene that the studio actually wanted cut. This is a whole sequence.
Well, we don't know that they wanted to cut that particular scene, but
the whole sequence,
the stuff at the farmhouse, right, they wanted to lose.
Right, and which sadly reveals that Marvel Studios is just like every other studio. No matter how much there's somebody at the top looking at it going, but there aren't enough things blowing up here.
Well, no, I don't see that it was a blowing up things so much as it was a cinematic universe thing, because the trade off is, you keep the farmhouse, but you have to include the cave, the waters of insight, where, you know, these scenes with Thor and Selvig going off on their own little quest to figure out what this thing is, because Thor's had this vision of hell, and that's spelled H-E-L. It's an actual place in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's you know, he's now trying to figure out, no, and I saw it, and I knew what they were doing. They're setting up Ragnarok.
Sure they are.
Ragnarok. Right. They're setting up Thor 3. And,
exactly.
And the other
there's a lot
stuff,
of
there's a lot of setup stuff in this movie that doesn't have anything to do with this movie.
Which I think actually is one of the personal flaws I have with the film. But
yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah. But I think that what you end up with is a scene that if you cut it out, you lose a significant chunk of character development for everybody in the film.
Yeah.
There are exchanges between Iron Man and Captain America that are at the farm. That if you lose them, you have lost a layer.
Yeah. Well, plus that's set up for Civil
exactly.
War. That's step
Again,
one into Civil
we're
War.
But at the same time, it's also character beats in a film that doesn't have a whole lot of real character beats.
Right.
So there are a couple of things that are at play here, I think. One is that we have a scene which lends itself to more than one interpretation. The obvious one, which a lot of people are going, but this is what we saw. And then the folks that a lot of people are taken away because it has become a thing.
Yeah.
It's exploded. And the short version of, I don't want to give away the whole scene, but basically it's an exchange between Bruce and Natasha where they are discussing what makes them monsters. Okay, and some of that can be kind of obvious. Bruce is, after all,
a monster.
But Natasha is also an assassin, which
right.
is a monster in its own kind of way. And it's this discussion,
we're going to have to get into spoilers.
Here's
we'll
the spoiler.
Have to do it. We'll
yeah. So
it.
So basically, what it is Natasha and Bruce. Natasha is making it very, very clear to Bruce that she would like to have a relationship with him. There's an attraction that we saw a little bit of in the Avengers, a little bit of flirty. Certainly, that first exchange where she tracks him down for S.H.I.E.L.D. Is very flirtatious. So this is something that doesn't come out of nowhere. I mean, it feels fairly organic. I could see why you would argue the point, but it doesn't feel like it's completely out of left field. All right. There's at least enough.
It's out of center field.
Right. There you go. So you basically have her saying, look, let's, you know, there's something there could be something between us. Let's let that happen. Let's see what happens with it. And while kind of ignoring the previous Hulk film, but also keeping it in canon because it is still technically a canon film, even though Edward Norton is no longer with us, and they've referenced other events from the film, Bruce kind of makes it very, very clear that he's probably sterile because of the radiation, and he's probably, not to mention the fact just the physical problems. I mean, he doesn't come right out and say, my heart rate gets too big, we're doing something fun, you're dead.
Yeah, you know. Suddenly I'm we've got a code green.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's basically what he's saying. And she points out that one of the things that happened to her when she was in the Red Room, part of her the assassin training, the whole thing where...
Conditioning.
It culminates. The graduation ceremony is sterilization. All of the trained assassins are sterilized, so that they completely take that option away from the girls, so that it doesn't become an issue ever.
Right. So the issue being forming emotional ties to offspring, significant others,
right,
people,
exactly. Mm-hmm.
And. See, I saw point A to point B to point C,
and a lot of people did, because I've been zipping through the comments on a lot of these articles, and there's a lot of back and forth of people saying, I don't understand why I don't see where you're getting that, because this is what happened. Ding 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 ding.
Yeah.
And then the reverse of that is people going, well, but look at what she's saying. She's saying this and this and this, and then she immediately follows, I can't have kids. You're not the only monster in the room, okay? And so there's, and Jason's making a face that you can't see. But the thing is, and it's not like I'm really, but I can read his eyes at this point. We can disagree with how they interpret it, but that doesn't make their opinion any less valid. Because they
I'm not saying it's not a valid opinion. But I do tend to wonder if it's correct.
Well,
I'm not going to say right, but correct. It's all a matter of an interpretation.
Exactly, and that once it becomes interpretation, it becomes the person who has the answer to that question just left Twitter.
Yeah,
and he isn't given us that answer. I bet he will. But the thing is that right now, there's going to be a segment of the internet which is not going to accept whatever answer he gives.
Right.
But
although I find it ironic, and this strays into politics more than it does story, but I find it ironic that Joss Whedon, who is a self-proclaimed feminist and writer of strong female characters and has been hailed as a hero of feminism,
sure,
even though he's a white male.
Mm-hmm. These are not
pale white male.
These are not even things that get in the way of being a feminist. But go ahead.
I'm talking.
Right,
in the whole big, the whole social justice warrior, all of that stuff. Mm. Right. He's been one of these guys that he's our guy.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Sure.
And the backlash from those same people.
Well, not from those same people. It's from a segment of those same people.
Like
we have talked about before. The people yelling the loudest on the internet are not always right. And sometimes they're terrible, terrible people.
Most of the time they're
terrible. Sometimes they're not.
People.
Sometimes they're just people who need to yell. But sometimes they're terrible, terrible people. Now, I am not for a moment saying that the folks who are upset with Joss Whedon right now are terrible, terrible people. Do not misunderstand that for a second, because I think in many ways they've been primed for this. And it's part of the bigger picture that we've talked about before.
Right.
Which is... movie studios seem to think that if you're a girl, if you what come with girl parts, you don't count if you're looking at an action film or a superhero film. And while Marvel has been better at this, all you have to do is look at the merchandising.
Right.
For the clothing lines, or, you know, I mean, all this stuff, it's like, yeah, okay, you guys still have the same problem. It's just not, and you do enough of this. It doesn't matter how much, you know, what, you've got one female character on the team. She doesn't have her own movie. Oh, well, the world's not ready for a Black Widow movie. Well, then we had Lucy. And remember how much you and I were watching Lucy to sit there and go,
right,
what's this going to do? Because this is the film that's going to prove it. Now, I thought Lucy was, the script was garbage, and it's a ridiculously silly movie, but it was a lot of fun to watch.
And it made money.
So here, you know, there's your evidence. You know, go out there and look. Mm-hmm. Scarlett Johansson can carry a film, an action film, all on her own.
And now, Ghost in the Shell,
yeah,
it's going to be your repeat performance.
But see, here's the thing. We're going to get both of those before we get a Black Widow movie.
Right.
And people are upset about that. And I think that you can argue very convincingly that not only do they have a right to be upset about that, because it's clearly the folks running the studios, no matter what studio it is, no matter how good Marvel has been,
mm-hmm.
people running studios seem to have a blind spot when it comes to recognizing that approximately half of their audience is not guys.
Right. Although it should be pointed out that the same merchandising problem we have with Black Widow,
mm-hmm.
we also have with Hawkeye. And I have a theory behind that, because you look at who's on the shirts.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the Avengers that are on sure. all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ones with powers.
Oh, yeah. No, except
for Tony, but Tony's got the suit.
The suit's a superpower.
Yeah. So you get the superpower guys on all the merchandise.
Sure.
And I would think that once Captain Marvel shows up, you're going to get a boatload of stuff mm-hmm. with her on it.
Sure.
Because she's got powers. And
oh, yeah.
And this is one of these idealized circumstances. You're not going to get, like you did with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ones with the powers or the oddball characters are the ones that were on all of the merchandise.
Sure.
You know?
The problem with Guardians of the Galaxy is the same problem.
Right.
You got one girl on the team.
Yeah.
And yet there's no stuff. They're not on the shirts. They're not
right.
there. There aren't the toys aren't there. And it becomes even with that argument being made. Because I think it's a perfectly valid argument that, yes, you put the folks on there who are, and not to mention, you put the folks on there who are the big names.
Sure.
You know,
the actors.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily that, but I mean the big names in terms of the characters. Because
sure,
Scarlett Johansson is a bigger star than Jeremy Renner.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Jeremy Renner. Jeremy Renner's a lot of fun to watch. I think he's a fun actor.
And he does a great job in this movie.
He does. Yes, he does. And Hawkeye actually gets some really fantastic stuff.
I would say he's probably the emotional core of the group in this story.
Oddly enough, I'd say the emotional core in this group is him, Black Widow, and Bruce Banner. Yeah, those three, you've got your big superpowered three, but those mm-hmm. aren't the ones who are carrying the emotional storyline.
Right.
And oddly enough, the twins actually carry it too, for about that long.
Yeah,
it's teased and then it's gone.
I have my own separate issues with the twin storyline in this, because
there are
bits and pieces where I went, wait a minute, that happened awful fast.
Well, there's a couple things. You know,
yeah.
we can get into story issues with this movie that I enjoyed.
Yeah, but we can get into that at some point.
But I think really what we run into is that we've built to this point. This is not an isolated incident. We've had enough moments to sit there and go, especially if you're a female fan,
mm-hmm.
says the two guys talking in a room by themselves. but we know female fans. We're friends
right.
with female fans. We've heard this from people. We've seen it on the internet, which we all know is true.
Yeah.
But we've heard it outside of that as well. Outside the bubble, we've heard this stuff being talked about.
You know, this goes back to Paul Dini talking mm-hmm. with Kevin Smith about his experiences with the Green Lantern animated picture mm-hmm. and Young Justice
sure,
and,
exactly.
and all of these others, you know, Tower Prep that he had on Nickelodeon, where the networks are coming to them, to the creatives. And of course, once you put marketing people and accounting people in charge of the studios, then it was done. It's all demographics now.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem that we're running into with this is the same kind of thing where you look at the numbers and you say, okay, boys buy this, girls buy this, you know, X and Y. These are the statistics. This is the data that we see. Although I did see something, I'll circle back around to that. But the marketing, all of the market research shows an X circumstance.
Right.
And based on that circumstance, they've got to make decisions on what products they're going to sell in that environment.
Sure.
And whether they have a complete misunderstanding of the market or not, they're actually not making these decisions in a vacuum.
Right.
They're using some information that tells them something that leads them to this. And I would be interested in seeing what that data shows. Because it's we've seen reports about the discussions that Disney sat there and said, we don't need the girls because we've already got the princess stuff locked up. We've got the girls there.
Right.
Which is okay. That's a decision that you're going to make, and you're making billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere along the lines, you might make a bad decision, but for the most part, I think you're doing you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. The machine works, and that's what this is. It is a machine.
It is
a business. You know, it's driven by dollars, and the decision to incorporate or not incorporate whatever character. Mm-hmm. Whoever it is, whether it's Black Widow or Hawkeye or Captain Marvel or Gamora or whoever, it's not a decision that somebody sits there and goes, eh.
True.
And do whatever with it.
True. But again, you're looking at approximately half of your audience who is looking up there and they see the one woman in both films.
Right.
And they're not there. They're not there in the toy lines, although there is a Gamora figure.
Right.
The new Guardians of the Galaxy figures that are out. They're pretty cool. They're not out yet, I don't think, but I just saw photos of them. They look really good.
Well, see, and who's got the big, there's a Black Widow action figure. The really fine detail sculpted one.
But those are like $100.
Right.
You know, or more. The stuff that you're going to find in Toys R Us. That's not a plug, by the way.
Although if they want to give
Toys
us money.
Us, please give us money. No. As we talk about, and we talk about the corrupting influence of money on art, please give us money. We're shallow. What can we tell you? But the thing is that for the average consumer, for the dad who wants to take his daughter, or the mom who wants to take her daughter, or the little boy who wants a Black Widow action figure, or the little girl who wants a Hawkeye action figure, you know, that stuff just isn't there. And they may very well be right that girls don't buy that stuff, quote unquote.
It may not be that they don't buy them at all. It may be they don't buy enough.
Well, that
maybe they're just looking at it and they're saying, you know, the numbers just don't support.
But that could be it. But the question I would be great to see that data because I would have a couple of questions. How current is it?
Right.
And what's it based on? I mean, what's your sample set? So basically, if you've given them a really crappy action, you know, female superhero action figure that just doesn't look good.
Lego's got a set with Black Widow in it.
Well, because Legos are awesome. There's a song. We know
there's a Lego Black Widow. I'm looking at her right now.
Yeah, well, see, but again, Lego. But Lego's a different company. I mean, Lego has it. Lego has.
Yeah, but it's Marvel.
True.
But Marvel has to control all of that.
Right, but the thing is that Lego. I think Lego has done extremely well overall, and I'm sure someone could point out where if I'm wrong, but Lego has done pretty well overall at being recognizing that their entire demographic is kids.
Yeah,
there's not really, there's stuff that's targeted for boys. And
although there have been complaints about the whole Lego Friends line, which is
the
purple and it's for girls.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
kind
of thing.
But at the same time, we all know, at least I think we all should know, that advertising companies are really, really good at telling you to target a specific demographic.
Yep.
And there is a logic argument behind that. And if you've heard us talk about what we are really proud of around these parts is the fact that our demographic cuts very young, all the way to not quite so young.
Yeah.
And across men and women. And that's something that we're kind of, because we'd rather have the bigger audience than sit there and go, we're going after the teenagers, you know?
Right.
So.
But see, the thing, having a background in advertising, mm-hmm. I can speak to the fact that in advertising and marketing, the way you approach Generation X is different from the way approach millennials,
sure.
and the way you approach baby boomers, because mm-hmm. everybody's priorities are different,
right.
and that's what you're looking at. And for a while, there was a push in the advertising industry to do away with demographics and focus on psychographics,
right?
Which was basically okay, the age and gender and income and education and all that stuff, that's fine as a supporting data, but what you want to do and look in psychographics is what are people interested in?
Right. And speaking of things we're interested in, because
yes.
we need to go to break, people are interested in really, really cool stuff. And you know where you can find really, really cool stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
That's right. They are our wonderful sponsor, and they have an amazing selection of material that is cuts across every age and gender and demographic that you can possibly imagine. And I'll just pick a thing that you like in the world of genre fiction. And
yep.
Odds are good they've got something for you there.
So yes.
We're really happy to have them.
And we are going to let you hear from them, and we will be back after the break when H2O continues talking about the problem with Black Widow.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at superherostuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. Superherostuff.com, where heroes shop.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Our Marvel discussion on Level 117, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV. That's our YouTube channel where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out. Sci-Fi for Me Radio and Sci-Fi for Me TV. All part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Until you unsubscribe in a sudden but inevitable betrayal.
How do you solve a problem like Natasha? I think we're focused a little bit too much on Black Widow. And I think that, yeah, we talk about, you know, I mean, Black Widow certainly is the lightning rod for all
sure.
of this.
Yeah.
But it goes back, the Sony hack, of course, has revealed that there have been discussions about other superheroine movies. An email between Ike Perlmutter, mm-hmm. who's the chairman of Marvel, chairman of Disney.
Right.
He's the top dog at Disney, and Michael Linton, who was an executive at Sony.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows how long ago this was, but this is an email from Perlmutter to Linton talking about, you know, superheroine movies, that didn't quite work. excuse me. Elektra.
Mm-hmm.
And quoting from the email here, very bad idea, and the end result was very, very bad. That's argumentative, debatable. Catwoman. This is the Halle Berry Catwoman.
Right.
That wasn't really Catwoman. Catwoman was one of the most important female characters within the Batman franchise. This film was a disaster. Yes, it was.
Yes.
Supergirl. One of the most important female superheroes in Superman franchise. This movie came out in 1984. It did $14 million total domestic with opening weekend of $5.5 million. Again, another disaster. Now, these three films are over 30 years old. Well, Supergirl,
right.
30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Catwoman was when? The 90s?
Yes.
Yeah? Elektra? The 90s, early 2000s?
The 2000s, yeah.
Yeah, so at least a decade since any of these films have come out. And you have to wonder, and we talked earlier about the merchandising stuff, and we can get back to that, but you have to wonder if we're in a place where we're going to have to wait until people the age of our kids are in charge to really balance out what kind of superhero movies they make. In terms of female-led superhero movies. Now, here's what I'm going to predict.
Sure.
Because this is going to be a really big thing here.
Mm-hmm.
The pressure is on for Wonder Woman to work.
Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel.
Well, if Wonder Woman doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
Captain Marvel will be the last one. Because it's already in the pipeline, it's already in development. So
sure,
they could spin Captain Marvel into the Avengers,
right.
And then she's part of the team, just like Black Widow, and okay, fine.
Sure.
Right now, there's no plan to make a Black Widow movie.
Mm-hmm. Which is...
Except for the one that Saturday Night Live did.
Right.
Which is actually kind of funny. But the idea here of a female-led superhero movie, I think, is contingent on two things. You got to have the success of Wonder Woman from both demographics.
Right.
I mean, guys have to go see this movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm perfectly fine going to see Wonder Woman.
Movie. Oh, sure. I want to see a good Wonder Woman
movie. And that's the key, a good Wonder Woman movie. Because these three films that Perlmutter is talking about were not good.
Well, and there's an interesting thing because those three films all are, they're all kind of representative of exactly how not to do it.
Yes.
And
Catwoman especially.
Well, so consider this for just a moment. You have got one of the most popular characters in comic books ever, this Batman fellow, right? And then you have this movie where you have one of the most popular actresses of her generation, a woman who is aging beautifully,
yes.
Whose talent is never gotten, you know, it just seems to get bigger and bigger. And Michelle Pfeiffer comes in and she makes Catwoman her own. I'm a huge fan of the second Batman film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right. Yep.
It's dark and twisted.
And by second Batman film, you mean Batman Returns.
Right, thank you.
Not Dark Knight.
Right, and it is dark and twisted and incredibly comic booky in a lot of places. And it looks at the psyche of Batman and goes, you know, you're not well, right?
Yep.
And I loved it. It's occasionally grotesque. It's bizarre movie. It's a bizarre film. And I really liked it. And Michelle Pfeiffer is really good in that film. And so here you have an opportunity to take this amazing actress in a great Catwoman costume and established, and something that you've established here,
mm-hmm.
and they do none of these things.
No.
It is like just like, oh, what a great character. Let's do somebody else. Wait,
exactly.
What?
Yeah.
And as much as I'm a big fan of Halle Berry showing up in not a lot of clothing, because I'm a single male.
Another actress who's aged very well.
Oh, yeah. And whose talent is far greater than what we've got in that movie, or unfortunately in her TV show.
Extant?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was very disappointed in that. But anyway, how could you... I mean, she could play the part. If you made her Selena Kyle,
mm-hmm.
okay, yep. and you sat there and gave her the Catwoman costume and you gave her a Catwoman plot.
And a good script.
And a good script. I would have been perfectly fine with her taking over for Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, because it would be it'd be Eartha Kitt all over
oh,
again.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and if
Eartha
Kitt
is a favorite for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. And so and completely blew it. Then you got Supergirl. Okay. What we've got none of the characters from the movie.
Jimmy Olsen.
Jimmy Olsen. Well, okay, yep. Not really. I mean, yeah, but it's and we've got a magic.
Yeah.
And it's just
but I
took
to
all you, the things out of the.
But you got to say though, Helen Slater as Supergirl.
Oh yeah.
Spot on.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she did such a good job with what she had.
She is the reason to watch that film. The problem is that there's other things that happening in the film aside from her just flying around and being cool.
I do like the fact, though, that the new Supergirl is wearing almost the exact same costume.
I know.
It's just a little bit darker.
Yeah.
She's got tights under the skirt. But other than that, the design, the belt,
mm-hmm.
everything is, this is Helen Slater's costume.
Well, but again, we're seeing
modern day.
We are definitely seeing that DC television, if nothing else, DC television is thinking about some of this stuff in ways that is
not in the movies.
True to the characters, making them, you know, modernizing them, tweaking them here and there. I mean, because let's face it, Arrow, the TV version of Green Arrow is very, very different from any comic incarnation we've had so far. But at the same time, it works.
You can make the connection to Longbow Hunters.
You can make some connection to it, but not a lot. But then you've got Elektra, which I think, which ultimately was fairly disappointing. But at the same time, but only because they did not have a great script.
Yeah.
Jennifer Garner did fine in the part. I mean, she played the part just fine. She certainly had the athleticism for it. She had
the star power.
Yeah, certainly the star power, and the costume was pretty close to the comic costume.
Mm-hmm.
A little more actually practical for engaging in a fight than the Elektra costume from the comics. Actually, a lot more practical.
Which you know makes sense.
Sure,
because you've got to translate this into live action now.
Sure, so. But at the same time, you lose. I don't know. There's a darkness to Elektra, because I mean she is after all
an assassin
that yeah. you lost in the film. So again, it comes back to story.
Yeah, but and that's what it comes down to in all of these cases, and even in the modern stuff, mm-hmm. because you look at a modern day equivalent of the superheroine film
mm-hmm.
are going to be things like The Hunger Games.
Sure.
Divergent, mm-hmm. I guess, maybe kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
You know, you look at these, you know, Twilight doesn't count, even though you've got a female, you've sort of got a female lead in that.
Hmm.
But it's not a superhero film. What else is out there? A Tomb Raider.
Sure.
Did okay. Did pretty well.
The first one did very well.
And for an adaptation, you know, Angelina Jolie is just a spot-on perfect Lara yeah. Croft, at least physically.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're getting a reboot of that.
Sure.
You have another Divergent movie that's still left to be out to put out there.
But yeah, and I think you know, the idea somehow that a woman can't carry a genre film, the lead of a genre film, and have the audience, have a male audience. I guarantee you that Hunger Games, a lot of guys went to see those films.
Mm-hmm.
It was not just, you know, just because you've got a woman in the lead doesn't mean it's just a woman's film. And if it's you know, to ignore something, yeah, we don't know the date of that email.
No, it's not in here.
Because it's just, I mean, if that was prior to the Hunger Games, then that's one thing. If it was after the Hunger Games, then are you completely oblivious to reality? Because, or, you know, then you got loose.
Well, and it's entirely possible they don't see The Hunger Games as a superhero show.
Well, but it doesn't. Yes. Okay. So here comes the question that are they looking at this stuff at all as being a superhero movie is a specific kind of film versus a science fiction film or a fantasy film? Or
it could very well be.
And I think that they are, because they may have it in their heads that you have to have, you know, the only people only care about boy superheroes, you know, guy superheroes. And that just, yes, it all comes down to money. It all comes down to film studios or businesses. But at the same time, again, it's that blatant ignoring of 40 to 50% of your audience. And we know there are good writers out there who handle material, strong women. I mean, it's like, you know, honestly, if they were to take that Wonder Woman animated film script and do a straight up
make a live action
of it, I'd be perfectly happy with that. As much as I thought Alfred Molina did a fine job playing Hades voice work,
Ares.
I think we'd want a different actor to play him on screen. Too many people would associate him with Doc Ock.
Well, I mean, I'll give you an example. Gina Carano took the lead in Haywire.
Right.
Production budget was $23
million. Mm-hmm.
It made a little over $33 million worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
So it made its budget back.
Sure.
And a little bit.
Right.
But, you know, they could be looking at stuff like that.
But you know what?
Although,
she was actually a relatively untried actress at the time, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was a wrestler.
Was that her first film as an actress? I mean,
think it was her first one where she was the lead.
Yeah. So I mean, that's a little different than say.
But that was the movie where everybody points to and says, she can carry a film. She could be Wonder Woman.
Oh yeah, right. But that's just the fans are looking at that. They're the people.
Right.
You know,
the
studio's looking at a few million dollars over budget and going, well, that didn't make enough money.
Right.
So, but the same, but it's
and
like,
it all comes down to numbers, like what we were talking about before. Hollywood is being run by the suits. It's being run by the accountants and the marketing people with not enough input from the creative people, I don't think.
Well, I think that as much as you're not going to see it because you're not going to get a quote unquote independent film from one of these big name characters. But if you had one of your, you know, if say Dark Horse Comics were to start doing a cinematic universe.
Valiant is about to.
Valiant is, yeah.
And a Harbinger is going to be one of them, and you've got a female lead in some of that.
The problem with Valiant's plans is that their first couple of films they want to roll out, just the plot synopsises are very derivative.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, okay, well, guys,
how are you going to do it different?
Yeah, because I mean,
make it worth
it. Is it Ripclaw? Ripclaw is one of the first films.
I'm not sure. I think it might be.
And he's basically not quite their version of Wolverine, but it's just, I mean, there's. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want us to hit superhero saturation point before we've got a Wonder Woman film or a Captain Marvel film or a Batgirl film. Or
well, now Batgirl's going to show up in Titans over on TNT, so she's going to be on the TV side. So it's less likely we're going to get Batgirl in the movies. And with Suicide Squad looking the way it's looking, I don't know how many more DC movies we're going to have.
See, I'm not bothered by the way Suicide Squad looks.
I don't know. Somebody looked at Harley's costume and said, "Can you make the shorts a little shorter?"
Yeah, well,
Can you make the shorts a little shorter? And I know it's Arkham.
It's Arkham, but still. But again, look at it from the suit's point of view. Look at it from the financial point of view. The Arkham games,
hugely popular.
Exactly, and a good chunk. As much as we love Harley from Batman Animated Adventures, how many people were reached by that show versus how many people were reached by the games?
Yeah.
And I honestly don't know the answer to the question.
Yeah, that's it. It does. it does make sense that they would go with Arkham Harley, because I would expect, especially now, mm-hmm. because given how long ago the animated series was,
sure.
and given now how New 52 has played out,
right.
and what New 52 Harley looks like, she's mm-hmm. she's more derivative of the Arkham Harley than anything else.
Sure.
that is the ones they're going to go with, because that's the Harley that everybody's got right now.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to those of us who really, really like the first Harley design. But at the same time, so I'm not bothered with how it looks. Again, it's another one of the... It's the Guardians of the Galaxy for DC.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, with actually a little more freedom.
Without being in space.
Well, yeah, a little more freedom to kill off your characters.
Yeah.
Because quite frankly, if you have reached the end of Suicide Squad, and you haven't killed off half your cast, you're doing it wrong. Which is an interesting thing. It's kind of an interesting thing, because we're going to get one of the darker, more morally gray,
to say the least,
teams,
right.
And in the context of every version of the character, I still prefer the original Suicide Squad run from the 80s.
Ostrander's
yeah.
version?
I still prefer that. That's still my favorite version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's been some good runs since. But it's something that's designed to make you both root for the bad guy and hope the bad guy gets what's coming to them.
Right.
And I'm looking at that cast, and I'm thinking, you're dead, you're dead, you're dead. I only have to keep two of you alive. If I'm the filmmaker, I got to keep Pretty Deadshot, much. And I got to keep Harley alive. And everybody else is cannon fodder. And I'm like...
Well, except Steve Trevor.
Well,
because
that's true.
Because rumor is that that Scott Eastwood is playing Steve Trevor, although that hasn't been confirmed yet.
Mm, okay.
He has been seen in a uniform on the set of Suicide Squad.
Okay, well, that'd be fine. I mean, keep him alive too.
But if Suicide Squad is a really gangbuster success movie,
mm-hmm.
it's still an ensemble picture.
Sure, you're not
going to have Harley as the lead.
Right.
It's going to be Harley and Deadshot and everybody else.
Well, and that becomes that doesn't
help the cause any, I guess.
No, it doesn't. And you're going to have a harder time getting a Harley. You know, who knows? But you're going to have a harder time getting a Harley solo picture.
Right.
She's one of the bad guys.
Except she's got a very popular, rather successful solo title in the comic books.
Sure, but I think that to do...
So there's potential. It
oh, yeah.
It does
there's,
show
oh, there,
that
there's certainly
you
potential.
Could do it.
Yeah, there's certainly potential. I think the issue would be that if, from a story standpoint... And maybe Suicide Squad will meet this need in the character. You've got to establish a relationship with the Joker,
mm-hmm.
and have that be there, because that's part of the defining characteristics of both her madness and the moments that she does good,
right?
And the moment she's a killer, is there's that relationship with Mr. J.
Yeah.
And you have to have that. And if you don't get that established in the Suicide Squad film, you're going to eat up screen time establishing that in a solo
Right.
Harley picture.
I like that she's got that choker that says Puddin' on it.
Uh-huh.
Because that tells me that's going to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be in the film.
Yeah,
there's going to be that piece of that relationship with mm-hmm. her, between her and Joker. Whether they're actually getting along or if they're past that point where she's ready to kill him.
Part of me wants
cartoon that we've already seen with this Suicide Squad.
Well, part of me wants that just so that you can have the interplay between, oh, honey, come on, you know, it's that whole, you know, you betrayed me. That's some of the fun banter that can be there, because the two characters can play off each other really, really well, and I think that would be kind of fun to watch.
If they do it right.
Right, if they do it right. So, I mean, the potential's there. So,
but see, outside of that, though, and Wonder Woman, and Captain Marvel, you don't have a whole lot of opportunity, because your studios are sitting there. I think everybody's in a wait and see.
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing is,
we figured they were wait and see mode before Lucy.
Yeah,
and then Lucy came out, and we got Captain Marvel announced.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. that's in the pipeline.
Right.
A Black Widow movie has been in discussions, and Scarlett Johansson has even said her contract negotiations are in flux.
Right.
There's always the possibility that a solo film could come out of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still an option.
Yeah.
Besides that, what? I mean, we're getting Scarlet Witch in Captain America's movie.
Right. I think
we just call them the Marvel movie chapter one, chapter two, you know, chapter six,
much.
Chapter seven anymore.
Well, I think that you know, you and I have talked about She-Hulk being on Netflix.
I still think that's a good
idea. I think it'd be a great place to put She-Hulk. But here's the thing. Maybe we're going to see these characters. I mean, we're getting Jessica Jones on Netflix.
That's true.
We are getting a character who 99.999% of comic readers don't know who she is.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. That's completely unfair. She did appear in Avengers as well. And the context of being Luke Cage's girlfriend and mother of his child.
What about a Dazzler series?
Well, you know what? Dazzler, you know, remember...
That could be the Marvel musical series.
Remember, for you kids at home, Dazzler was actually designed to be a movie way back when.
Yes.
When Marvel was apparently not aware that Disco had died, and so they created a Disco-based character, I think, 2 or 3 years after Disco really was over. It's one of those things. But yeah, there was supposed to be a movie. And I think that the problem is that the Dazzler of that time period with the silver suit and the long blonde hair and the roller skates was much more fun than the Dazzler who became a regular X-Men character later.
Yeah.
Because she had a costume, you know, she had a super, yeah, it's just, I think it would be hard. You know what would happen? Oh, it'd be Dukes of Hazzard all over again.
Oh,
Starsky and Hutch all over again. Yeah. It'd be played for laughs.
Yeah,
and maybe Marvel could do that. Maybe Marvel could do the superhero comedy film, but I would be hard pressed to see to trust that,
because we are going to get Jem and the Holograms. So
yeah, but there's a lot of unhappiness about that film.
Right, but let's say Jem and the Holograms does really well.
Sure. Okay.
All right. Oh. Just in some
all in favor of it happening
in some alternate universe, Jem and the Holograms is a huge hit. Marvel
Which
looks.
We hope that you have a huge hit.
Yeah, and Marvel can look there and say, "Hey, we've got a rock and roll character. Why don't we make a Dazzler movie, and play her." Like the Dazzler, the roller disco and all that is the act.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
And she's not like that the entire time. That's just the on-stage
persona.
Right,
the stage performer. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And then whatever powers or skills or whatever she's got that makes her a superhero is the stuff off the stage.
Right. Well, yeah. No, I think the thing is that you're looking at still a fairly obscure character for a lot of audiences.
Right.
It doesn't have the same kind of readership that, say, Captain Marvel's going to have. Now, that said, the popularity of the Miss Marvel series.
To Kamala Khan, the new one.
I think that's
another possibility for a TV adaptation, I think. Maybe.
You know what? I think it'd be a great one for TV because you give it a chance to develop the character and it'd be more, you wouldn't have to make it an event picture.
Yeah.
You could actually have
a character.
Yeah, which I think. But
I still want to see She-Hulk on Netflix.
Well, because again, you could do with She-Hulk, you can do things. You can either do it straight and have the character development there, or you can do the sort of John Byrne looking right at the camera, you know, winking and nodding, that whole little stretch there.
Well, Deadpool's about to do it.
I know. So,
and Deadpool, despite, you know, whatever it's going to end up being,
mm-hmm.
and we know they're going to break the fourth wall with it, because that just is what makes that character work.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's still part of the continuity that involves the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
So, there, you know, Simon Kinberg is already allowed for the possibility of a crossover at some point way down the line somewhere far away. So even if they're doing, you know, they're breaking the fourth wall, that shows that they're thinking about that. So it is doable inside a bigger universe, so they could do the same thing with She-Hulk in the Netflix show.
Oh, sure.
And still be perfectly fine within the context of everything else.
Right.
I still want Jennifer Walters to show up on Daredevil. That'd be the best. That would be where you introduce her.
That's where you introduce her.
Yeah. She gets injured in Defenders.
Mm-hmm.
She gets the transfusion from her cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the setup for Phase 2 Netflix.
Right. And I think that we may see more female.
Make the royalty checks out too.
There we go. Exactly. We may end up seeing, because TV gives you a little more control and flexibility. I mean, Penny Dreadful is a female, it's an ensemble cast, but it doesn't work without Eva Green.
Right.
If she's not there, who cares?
Well, and you were making a point earlier about the villain for this season.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Helen McCrory. She's,
yeah.
Oh, she's just, I'm looking at her going, yes. You know, the previous season was vampires, scary, really these are not sexy glamour vampires. These are, I'm sorry, did you just chew my face off?
Yes.
You just bit half my head off. That's not, but if you've seen the trailer for Penny Dreadful, then you've seen her in the bathtub with blood in the water and, smoking her cigarette, and it's like there's blood everywhere. I'm looking, the full version of that scene, you're going, yeah, she's bad. And it's got real potential, because she's a wonderful actress, but she's getting a chance to, I think every actor loves the chance to play really bad.
Right.
Because, the villains are often the best written parts. And this is a show full of really great written parts, so I'm really excited to see what they do with her. But you may get your stuff on television for Marvel and DC, where you get even a chance, a Zatanna TV show.
I still have the pitch ready.
See, there you go. You could have there's a lot of great DC characters, female characters. You could do a Batgirl character with Cassandra Cain.
Yeah.
You could. So it's a much.
Or Stephanie Brown.
Yeah, either one, yeah. And you could do, or you could, wow, you could do it. I realize that Birds of Prey didn't work.
But now that we've got Harley and Suicide Squad,
yeah,
you could come up with some sort of, maybe not necessarily a Birds of Prey, but you could come up with a female ensemble that includes Harley and Catwoman and Ivy and... granted, those are all villains,
right? But yeah,
but those are what was it? Gotham Sirens,
yeah.
And then a companion piece, Birds of Prey, with Huntress and Black Canary and Batgirl.
And
not that it's going to happen.
No, but the thing is that you've got maybe on television, because in some ways the problem with Birds of Prey is that it actually got too far away from the source material.
Yeah, but you're going to have people look at it and say, it didn't work. That kind of show is not going to work.
Yeah, but
because that's what Perlmutter exactly is doing right here with Catwoman and Supergirl.
Mm-hmm. So I think that you've got, but maybe that's the future for our, and that's unfortunate, because it would be good to see that be on the big screen, because I guarantee you that a well written Wonder Woman film, people are going to go see.
Yeah.
A well-written Captain Marvel film, people are going to go see. A well-written Catwoman solo film, not based on the Gotham version of Catwoman as a child, who is apparently just, awful. All awful.
I saw the other day, it was today, somebody was talking about how Gotham has basically turned into the prequel for Batman 66 Begins.
You know what? I had the demand that I'm starting to hear is we need Chief O'Hara.
I saw that.
And I saw that.
O'Hara needs to show up.
Makes sense.
It actually does. Because if you play it out to its logical conclusion, you do get to Batman 66, because they've just gotten nuts. They've just gone crazy on that show.
Oh, God, yeah. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's the logic of God. Remember when we were hoping for Gotham Central?
Everybody was hoping for Gotham Central,
and we are denied Gotham Central now. We can't have it. We don't get to have Gotham Central, because we had this, and they're going to look at this. And even if someone sits there and goes, "No, really, sorry about that," we're gonna do it right this time. They're gonna go, "No." It's like
you had your chance.
Exactly.
Done.
It's thank God we have Penny Dreadful, because we're never going to get another film version of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Maybe in another 10, 15 years. Because
maybe.
We are.
It's going to take another generation gap.
Because we're reboot central now. There's nothing that says it's going to stop.
But you should do. But something like that, you almost would want to do on television anyway, because you're going to have to condense everything down so much.
You got to give it room to breathe.
Well, because the point of something like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is all the things that you can discover looking at each panel in the comics, all the references to other works of literature and the advertising of the time.
Yeah.
That's why each of those panels is that's why there's annotations to the League comics, so you can sit there and go, page 32 was, oh wow, that's a really great reference to this 17th century novel that I've never read, but now I'm going to look up, because that's why you're reading the annotations.
Right.
You're not going to get that in an hour and a half film.
No.
It helps if you also have a good story, a proper villain, and you don't cast entirely the wrong people to play the parts, or get the wrong director to play off one of the largest personality actors of the second half of the 20th century.
Yep.
Don't do that. So, we've had television. La Femme Nikita. How many versions? Two versions of that with strong female leads.
Yeah, on TV. Three versions of it in the movies.
Yeah,
because you had the original, which is brilliant.
Oh yeah,
really good. You had Point of No Return with Bridget Fonda,
which is enjoyable, but it's too clean compared to the original.
Yeah, and I guess that's maybe those are the
just
only
the,
two.
The two
just
features,
the two
yeah.
and the features, and then you had the two TV shows.
We had Alias.
Yeah, which was pretty much La Femme Nikita.
Yeah,
in an American version.
So what's interesting there, and it, admittedly, a lot of the superhero shows we're seeing right now are ensemble casts, right? And it works better in Arrow. As much as I love the ensemble cast for Flash, it makes more sense with the Arrow universe than for Flash. But it's whatever. What the Supergirl show is going to be to some degree an ensemble show.
Yeah, it's going to be an ensemble, but it's going to be a female lead.
Yeah.
Superhero show, and hopefully it'll play very well.
Oh, I'd like to think so. I think that.
Although, given that it's on CBS, I don't know. Because
well,
when's the last time CBS had any kind of a superhero science fiction thing that worked?
What was the last thing they had?
Well, Extant.
Yeah, okay.
Other than that, what other science fiction?
Yeah.
I mean, CBS hasn't really been in the science fiction game.
No, they really haven't.
Whenever. That'll be interesting to see how that plays.
Yeah, but I think that the difference is I think that you actually have a successful DC model on television to refer to.
Right.
And in some cases, even when they're stumbling, like the first half of the season for, say, Constantine, they do right themselves eventually, for the most part, when they're and honestly, the first season of Arrow was really dodgy.
Oh, yeah, first season of Arrow was a mess.
And
this season of Arrow has been kind of a mess.
It's not as been as good. That's what Arrow needs. Arrow needs a spinoff show, a Black Canary spinoff show.
Well, see, that's the
weird thing. And I know we're getting the spinoff show that's going to have White Canary-ish rumor thing, whatever
that's
it is.
That's the rumor, yeah. She's going to be White Canary. But see, the thing about it is, I think what you really need to do is, since we're going to have time travel in Flash, and we've already introduced it, I say you use time travel in Flash to reset Arrow, because Arrow's a mess. Arrow's a complete mess at this point.
It really is. Yeah.
I think a Black Canary series would work. I would love to do a Zatanna series.
Yeah, and I think that if you had. And I realize that studios don't think this way. They don't. It's very, very rare that a movie studio looks at a television series and says, "Let's bring it to the big screen," while it's still on TV, or if it's right after it's
right.
The era where you'd have like a Star Trek TV show go off the air, and they go, "Hey, let's move to the movie theaters."
Right.
Is kind of not there anymore.
No, you wouldn't get something like that.
It becomes a oh well, 10-20 years from now, you look back, nostalgia, $6 billion man. I don't know. It's just, we want our Black Widow movie because there's, if you can do a 1970s political thriller with
Winter Soldier,
yeah, then you can do a Jason Bourne with superpowers Black Widow movie.
Yeah.
You know you can do that. Set things up so you can you have worked yourself to the point where you're willing to go with the Batman versus Superman concept, which has been played. If you're willing to make that run, if you sit there and go, okay, we're going to do it, and you said, okay, you're going to have the fight, then you can make a Wonder Woman movie. You can sit there and put her up on the big screen and sit there and go, we're going to have her fight gods. We're going to have her fight, you know, creatures of myth. We're going to have her fight Nazis. I don't care.
But you know they're not going to do that.
Oh, just give me Clash of the Titans the way it should have been.
There you go.
Let it be a supernatural. Let the gods of ancient Greece invade modern world, and Wonder Woman has to hold them at bay.
Let George Perez write it.
Yes, that would be good too.
George Perez and Marv Wolfman.
Yes,
can write the script.
Let's make that happen. And you know what? Three quarters of the way through the film, Superman and Batman show up, but she's got it covered. She's good.
Yeah.
She's like, boys, thanks a lot. All I got to do is knock out this Hydra, and I'm good to go.
Yeah,
should have stopped by a little bit earlier because I could have probably used a little bit. Nope, I took care of it.
Yeah,
that's Hades over there. He's looking a little battered. I'd be like, yes, that'd be great.
Except we're not going to get that.
I can dream.
But I'm going to tell you now, if Wonder Woman does not do well, and, you know, the mixed reaction that Gal Gadot's getting and all of the...
Completely unfairly, by the way.
Well, yes, completely unfair. But the mixed reaction that she's getting, the mixed reaction that the DC Universe as a whole is getting...
Also,
combined with, you know, New 52 and DC Cinematic Universe, all of the stuff that, because DC is doing it wrong, my opinion, my two cents.
DC has made us question what they're doing
right
for a few years now,
and I think that has the potential of having an impact on Wonder Woman's box office numbers. If Wonder Woman does not perform to expectations box office-wise, Captain Marvel will be the last female lead superhero we get.
The thing that's going to be really interesting to see is how much she's actually in Batman vs. Superman. How much does she actually show up?
How much impact she has on the story.
Yeah, because I think that if they do it right, and again, you look at who wrote this script, who came in and helped on this script, and it gives you some potential for some hope. But you wanted to sit there and think that if she shows up and just completely nails it and gives us a moment, the audience sits there and goes, yes, then that's going to go a huge, it's going to do two things. It's going to, if the Batman-Superman fight actually works, if we get Superman, you know, saying I'm never going to kill again,
right,
and we get Wonder Woman that makes an audience cheer, then DC has a foot in the game. Then
they haven't turned the corner.
Things are there, and that makes it more possible to have a strong Wonder Woman film because they'll sit there and see a reaction,
right?
And as much as they should have seen with Lucy, we have a superhero film. She's got all the superpowers in that movie. It's not like she was short any. I mean, what's
she couldn't fly?
Oh, whoop-tee-doo. So yeah, the market is there. We want to see them.
Yeah,
and we're old guys.
Old white guys.
We want. Give me a good Holly Berry Catwoman movie. Give me a good bring back Holly Berry to play the proper Catwoman movie.
Although, you know what? I would not mind seeing Michelle Pfeiffer and Cameron Bracandova in the same film.
Oh, hey. Yeah.
Because Cameron, as young as she is, you know, she looks like Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
They could either be, you know, same character, different ages, or mother-daughter, or something. But you could put those two in a Catwoman movie, and you'd be okay.
Yeah. That'd be cool. Right. That'd be cool.
See, if the studios would just listen to us, we could fix the things. Because the first thing we'd tell them is say, let Bruce Timm be your Kevin Feige. Thank you, bye. Sign the check. We go home. Let Bruce have it.
That's right.
And, you know, Bruce Timm, Paul Dini.
And even when Bruce goes dark,
mm-hmm.
Bruce goes dark the right way, so...
Yeah,
Paul Dini goes from dark the right way. So
anyway, all right, that's gonna do it for us. We are gonna go dark for a week.
Yes,
and be back in a week's time next Thursday. We will be talking about something else, and
because the internet will provide.
Yeah, really, because you know, it's funny. You know, half the time we come in here and say, "Oh, what are we gonna talk about this week?" Well, I don't know. Oh, here's this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, just kind of ka-thunks right there in the middle of everything.
It's like, oh, is this a bow? Because it has a bow on it.
Yes. All right. If you have comments or a suggestion for a topic that we could talk about, you can send us a note, h2o@scififorme.com. You can find us on all the social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Pinterest, YouTube, Google+. And you can always leave us a comment here. And that's going to do it for us. We will be back next week. Timothy Harvey.
A pleasure.
And my name is Jason Hunt, most of the time. We will have another...
Wait, do you have a secret identity?
Yeah, sure. George.
Are you Wonder Woman?
No. No. Oh, this reminder, just to let everybody know, we are syndicated on Amazing Stories magazine. Where you can find our show running a week behind the current show over there. AmazingStoriesMag.com is their website. And we do encourage you to visit SuperheroStuff.com.
Our fine sponsor.
For fine licensed merchandise. And we will be back with another episode of H2O next week.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.